Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz. Arthur joins us, of course, the food maven, every Monday morning live. And, of course, we bring Arthur to you later on in the week during our noontime hour and on the weekends as well. And I have to admit, I was channeling Arthur Schwartz this weekend. Good morning,
Arthur. What did
you
do?
I had sandwiches for dinner and lunch.
Well, so did we over here. One day I couldn't even make a sandwich. All I wanted was fruit, which reminded me of the old days when, in fact, we used to eat fruit soup in July and August. And there's a recipe. I'm pretty sure there's a recipe for an old Eastern European fruit soup in soup suppers. And there must be a cold soup. I haven't looked at it in years. But now that I'm talking about it, thinking about it, and the fact that I have been buying the most sensational cherries for an absolutely reasonable price, which over here is $3.99 a pound, but they're sensational. Not one is even vaguely sour. I would make fruit soup. So I you know what, Marshall, I can't tell a lie. I had to turn the heat on this week and cook something. It's sort of like an addiction. Yeah. So no matter how hot it is, I figure if it's early in the morning, I can get over it. I have the whole day to get over it. So one morning I actually made mango chutney. Now, this evolved from the fact that my nephew and niece, Brian and Michelle, eat a lot of Indian food, and their go-to takeout is Indian. So we got all this Indian food, and Bob said, "Where's the mango chutney?" I said, "I don't think there is any mango chutney. We didn't order it." And actually, when we order in Indian from our local Brooklyn Indian restaurant, we have to order it separately, and I have to pay $4 for what is a quarter of a cup of mango chutney. And in fact, to me, it's mango syrup. I mean, there's almost no fruit in this stuff. So I don't like that. And I was for a long time making my own mango chutney, a complicated recipe. But I recently found this super easy recipe. And you know, now that you can buy already peeled and cut up pitted mango in the supermarket, it's a very easy thing to do. That's the only hard part of making mango chutney is cutting up the mangoes. And just after saying to Bob, "Oh, next time I come for an extended stay, I'll have to bring some mango chutney." But I didn't have any mango chutney. So I went supermarket shopping as soon as we got back, and sure enough, there was exactly the right amount of cut-up, peeled, pitted mango in the supermarket, so I bought it. It seemed to me like I was getting a message. Maybe an hour before in the car, I had been talking about mango chutney, and there was the mango. So here's the recipe. Now, I know not everybody wants to make mango chutney, but I guarantee you this is like the easiest thing in the world if you get the peeled, pitted, and cut up mango. By the way, I cut up the mango further. I want more or less half-inch cubes, pieces. It's going to be very uneven. That's okay. But more or less half-inch pieces, and 2 pounds of peeled mango, pitted mango, makes about 5 to 6 cups of cut-up mango. So that's what you need, 5 to 6. I ended up with almost 5.5. 6 is okay, too. It depends on how you cut it, blah, blah. Mine was a tiny bit over 2 pounds, 2 packages. First, you want to make your syrup, which is 2 cups of sugar. Don't get scared. This makes a lot of chutney. 2 cups of sugar. Chutney's a sweet. It's a preserve. You got to have sugar. 2 cups of sugar and 1 cup of distilled white vinegar. I mean, your ordinary white vinegar that you use to clean with. There's no point in using fancy white wine vinegar. However, if cider vinegar is your go-to vinegar, I think cider vinegar is perfect. instead of the white vinegar. So 2 cups of sugar, 1 cup of vinegar, put it in more or less 3-quart saucepan. You want to be able to have a lot of, it's not going to fill your saucepan. It can be 2.5 quarts. Put the syrup ingredients in, bring it to a boil, and when the sugar has dissolved completely, which is pretty much as soon as it comes to start simmering, if you stirred it a few times, add your 5.5 cups of cut-up mango and the other seasonings, which is a medium onion. I diced mine as finely as I can, which is pretty fine, but quarter-inch dice is fine. A teaspoon, a rounded teaspoon, of mustard seeds. By the way, this is the only ingredient I had to go out and buy other than the mango itself. And now that I'm looking at other pickling things, I'm glad I have mustard seed in the house. I'm going to make good use of it later on this summer. Mustard seed. Crystallized ginger, which I happen to keep in the house. And crystallized ginger lasts a good year from one Thanksgiving to the next, and I usually buy it at Thanksgiving because I make a pumpkin pie using it. So about 1/4 cup of finely diced or chopped, or I just slivered the slices of crystallized ginger, and 1/4 cup of that. 1/4 teaspoon, you know what, 1/2 teaspoon, I think it could be better, 1/2 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes, a very large clove of garlic, which you will mince finely or chop finely or smash and then chop finely, however you want to. You can bring out as much of that garlic flavor as you want. I didn't add any salt, and somehow I didn't miss it, but I think when you have hot pepper and mustard seed and blah, blah, you really don't need salt. But, you know, American cooks put salt in everything. So if you really feel like you have to, a big pinch of salt probably couldn't hurt. Anyway, you bring that all to a boil, and you let it simmer for about 45 minutes to 50. Mine took 55 minutes. I timed it. And I wanted it to be nice and thick. I would say after about 40 minutes of simmering, I smashed some of the chunks of mango against the side of the pot, and that helps thicken it too. And mine is pretty stiff. Now that it's been in the refrigerator for a couple days, more than a couple days, but as soon as it cooled down, it was pretty stiff, and that's what you want. You don't want to, I hate the mango chutney you get in almost every restaurant. I bet you it's some restaurant brand, and it's mainly syrup, and I want fruit. So that's it. And now I must say, it makes it's over 1/4 of chutney. So you can divide this into jars and give it away as gifts. However, I can see that I'm using it pretty fast. For one thing, eating a lot of sandwiches, as you are, I discovered that it really does wonders for a ham and cheese sandwich. for me, bread is really important, and we get these really good locally baked square rolls. I think they're perfect for ham and cheese sandwiches. I put on mayonnaise on one side and mango chutney on the other. Depends on how sweet, tangy you want your sandwich, how much chutney you put on, but I found not even a table. I mean, let's say it's a tablespoon on a 3-inch square piece of bread. It also is good, I have found, on egg salad sandwiches or sliced egg sandwiches, if that's what you prefer. And this reminded me of, I had to look this up and see when this recipe started becoming popular, but certainly it was popular in the 1960s, 50s probably too, chutney blended with cream cheese. Do you remember this, Marshall?
Yes, I do. My grandmother, used to love it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So, yeah, but in those days we bought this pretty decent, I thought at the time, who knows, Major Gray's chutney in the supermarket. That was like, I think it was one of those fancy brands, like, help me here, something black. Cross and Blackwell. I think it was a Cross and Blackwell product. Who knows if they're still in business. Anyway, that chutney was full of fruit, as I recall, and you blended it with cream cheese, and you use it as a spread. So I have some in the refrigerator as we speak. I didn't go out to buy, I didn't go out and buy cream cheese to do this. I just happened to have some leftover cream cheese from a bagels and cream cheese and et cetera sort of luncheon. And I blended it with the chutney. I think more or less one-on-one, half chutney, half cream cheese. And it's going to be handy today because somebody's stopping by for tea. So when they come for tea, I can give them my cream cheese and chutney. I'm not sure on what yet. So that that was my cooking this week, but I also could not resist making beans, mainly because I was trying to clear off a shelf, and there was a jar of beans. I figured they're last year's beans. They need to be cooked. And I could live through an hour of bean simmering. And so I put them to soak, and the next day it was a good 18 hours later, I cooked up the beans. Because sometimes if beans have been hanging around a long time, and as I said, these were at least a year old, they take longer to cook. So I soaked them longer. Must have a warning here. If we have another couple of days with the intense heat of the last two, even if you have air conditioning, I would keep the soaking beans in the refrigerator because they can ferment at room temperature. And if you see a slight bit of foam rising to the surface of your soaking beans, that's the little fermentation. Don't worry about it, but catch it as soon as you can and scoop it off and put the beans in the, well, don't scoop it off, just put the beans in the refrigerator. So I soaked the beans, and you know what? Beans take a lot longer than anybody's willing to admit, I find, because especially cannellini beans, which almost every recipe you look at tells you to simmer them for 45 minutes to an hour, but mine really took an hour and 15 minutes, and it wasn't just because they were a year old, because I find they always take that long. You have to cook them until they're creamy inside, and that's beyond the point where many people take their beans off. You have to cook them beyond what you think is the right firmness because they will firm up as they cool down. And don't make the mistake. I made a bean salad. I mean, actually, I made a tuna and bean salad. But don't make the mistake of dressing your tuna and bean salad or your bean salad or your beans with anything acidic until you're ready to eat them, because acid will also make them hard again. So if you, for instance, put, as I do, oil and lemon juice on my beans when I'm eating them, actually even sometimes when I'm eating them hot, but certainly when I'm eating them cold, salt and pepper, that lemon juice will make them hard again, just a little bit of lemon juice. So you can put the oil on, you can put salt, the pepper, whatever condiments, whatever seasonings you're putting in. I made mine with trying to use up. I bought a bargain bunch of scallions. It was like, you know, 35 cents a bunch. I don't know what I was thinking. I bought so many, but I used a lot of scallions. I had some celery, so I used up my celery. So it's probably about, I don't even want to do measurements because I didn't even measure the beans. I just poured them into a bowl and cook them. Anyway, and a can of tuna fish, and then I finished it off on the plate, so to speak, with lemon juice. And it was really delicious. And now I still have a lot of beans. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with them today. I'm trying to, is there any way I can combine beans and chutney? I don't think so. I'm not that creative. So fruit, it could be another fruit day. Looking pretty bleak over here in Brooklyn.
It's going to start to rain and cool off probably somewhere in your neck of the woods about 1:30, 2 o'clock.
And yeah, then, well, it could be any minute, actually.
You know, when I listened to you, I really did channel you because I did this. Jill called me a couple of times over the weekend. She said, what'd you have for dinner? So I said, ham and cheese sandwich. But you know what I did to make it liven it up?
Yeah.
On one of my ham and cheese sandwiches, I put just a really thin sliced half sour pickles that are absolutely great.
Oh, yes. I would love that myself.
And a slice of tomato. But on the next...
Ah, I forgot about the tomato. Look, it's middle of July. Yeah. There are great tomatoes all over. And I always put a tomato on my... It's the moisture. It's the main moisture on a ham and cheese sandwich for me.
But then the next sandwich I made, which was ham and cheese, I changed it up. I used sweet gherkins, and I chopped them up, and I put that on the ham and cheese sandwich with the tomatoes. Mm. And it gave it a sweet taste.
Added a little hot pepper or something like that.
I didn't have any hot pepper. I would have. I should have added.
Gherkin chutney.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe I invented something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe you did. You know what? You gave me some inspiration here. I have a gherkins, a big jar of gherkins in the fridge. I should do something with them today. And also, you know, this is the weather for your caprese salad, or my caprese salad, meaning slices of mozzarella, slices of tomato, oil, and basil. And I don't put any acid on that, but I know people who put balsamic vinegar on their caprese, and I just look the other way. Because I really like the flavor of everything that's on that plate without the balsamic. But, you know, to each his own.
I find balsamic vinegar is better when you use it on a sandwich and you put it on a little bit of it on the bread than it is on...
Yes,
I
like that too sometimes.
Then on
I was craving a good old New York-style overstuffed Italian hero sandwich, meaning made with all kinds of cold cuts and cheese, lettuce, tomato, oil, and essential vinegar. And I was looking and never... There is a place in Red Hook called DeFaro. Not DeFaro. That's the pizzeria. I'll think of it in a second. But it's like that. It's an old-time sandwich shop. They have no tables and chairs. There is a counter you could stand at, and there is a butcher block table in the back that sometimes there are guys hanging out there, and you can butt in. But basically, you eat in your car. It's a truck stop. Anyway, even them, you know, I don't know. But I go to Fairway, which is the big, big supermarket in Red Hook with its own parking lot, which is a great luxury here in Brooklyn to have a market with a parking lot. Now, I don't love Fairway for everything. By a long shot, I found the produce was overpriced and not with commensurate quality. However, there's a cafe at the back of Fairway where you can sit and look at the harbor and the traffic in the harbor and the Statue of Liberty. It's very, very nice. In the good weather, you can sit outside. In bad weather, there's a big indoor area. And they have like a cafeteria, and they had a hero sandwich that looked so good, I could not resist buying it. And in fact, it was so overstuffed that I could only eat half of it. And so with my usual big appetite, that's saying something.
One day, I'm going to have to get you to come up to Torrington, Connecticut. There's not much in Torrington, Connecticut that you want to go do to.
Well, I don't know. I used to go there all the time.
But there's a market called Carbone's Market.
Oh.
It probably, outside of New York City, makes the best hero sub grinders you want to talk about.
Now, in that part of the woods, it's grinders.
Yeah, it's grinders. And they're absolutely...
I grew up with grinders.
And what are subs?
Summer camp in Connecticut.
They're the same thing. Subs and grinders and hoagies are all the same thing.
And
well,
heroes.
The other day, I saw on a menu in Philadelphia a wedge. And, you know, in Westchester, they're called wedges or wedgies. And but that's not what it was in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, it was a wedge of lettuce.
Well, one day I'll take you to Carbone's, and you can't just get you can't eat it in one meal. Literally, a 6-inch to a foot long grinder will give you three lunches.
My nostalgia for this is so tremendous, Marshall. I went to camp on Gardner Lake, or Lake Gardner, and in Colchester. And there was, at the end of the lake, a boathouse, rental, swim place, and sub place. And we used to canoe from camp to buy grinders there and bring them back. And so my memory for this sandwich is of a soggy grinder. It's got to be like at least 12 hours in the wrapper with the meat and the oil and the vinegar.
Drips through. Reminds me of David Perlmutter. Sorry.
But when I go to Torrington to get the car washed, and it's up now once every month now, I try to go to Carbone's get something.
Have you been doing that?
I do it every time.
I keep aching to come up to the northwest corner. So maybe that's a plan.
Yeah, maybe it's time for a food tour, northwest corner.
I get a vegetarian.
Yeah, well, maybe.
A vegetarian grinder from them.
The bread. Isn't that all?
What they do with me, they make it to order. They scoop out the inside of the bread on the top and the bottom, and they load it with lots of vegetables, lettuce, tomato, onion, black olives, hot peppers, roasted peppers. But if you like meat, then you'll love it too. But it's just the way they make it and the sauce that they make that you can put on it.
I don't think you're ever going to be really thin, are you?
No.
No,
it's too late to worry about that.
Now that I'm hungry, what do I eat?
Exactly. You come up here. You and Marshall go get the car washed. It's going to rain anyway.
I'm already a wet rag here.
And go to Carbone's. It's kind of nice here, especially comparatively. I've got one quick question, and that is a technical. Does all chutney have to be sweet?
Well, I think by definition.
That's what I'm asking.
Yes.
Okay. Because I was trying to think
of it. It's a preserve.
So I was
just trying to preserve it. You need sugar,
right? Okay.
If you preserved it with salt,
it
would be something. It would be pickles.
Okay. All right.
Or something like that.
All right. So that's what I was trying to figure. Because I was trying to develop
Are you avoiding sugar?
I'm not avoiding it. I just don't like it on my ham.
Oh well. Don't put it on ham.
I won't. Or cheese. No.
I hate it to go on Indian food, where I don't need that sweet.
Right.
But
I don't.
In fact, Mr. Bob here, if we have no chutney in the house and he's forgotten to ask for it from the Indian restaurant, he will put apricot preserves on his Indian food because he needs that sweet to counteract the spice. And I think that's the chutney that I make with like a half teaspoon of hot red pepper flakes is not very spicy at all. In fact, I would, for my own taste, make it a little spicier, a little more red pepperier. But, this is for also children's tastes, and I don't want them to be shocked by hot pepper.
Right. No.
I don't crave that sweet either. I just don't need it. I'd rather have a sour, be honest. I'd rather have. I'd rather have raita. I'd rather have cucumber.
Likewise, but maybe it's a relish thing. Is it relish?
Relish, yeah.
Relish can be sweet, right? But relish can be sweet and sour, no? When I say sour, salty.
I think relish is a pretty vague word.
Okay,
I have to look it up.
All right, I have to.
I mean. You're thinking pickle relish.
I am thinking pickle, and then I'm trying to make some sort of. What I'm really trying to make is some sort of Italian chutney. I'm trying to make something that has onions
green
and capers.
Sauce.
What?
Green sauce.
Something like that. Yeah.
Salsa verde.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you want it strictly savory and.
I want it salsa verde, but I want it. What you were talking about having your spoon stand
well, how
up
about
in the
most? Well, no, I was going to say, the Italians do make spiced preserved fruit in mostarda from the northeast of Italy, where these mustard fruits are traditional on a side with a bolito misto, with a boiled dinner. And I'm sure these days they're used in many other ways. but that was the traditional use as a condiment for boiled dinner. So there you go, even in Italy, well, northeast. So as Cecilia once said, nice people for Austrians.
Sorry, but this is something that people don't. We live here in our little tri-state area, which means we have New York, Massachusetts, and
Connecticut.
Thank you. I'm losing my mind. But when I came up here from the city 9,000 years ago, I was used to a different tri-state area, which is of course New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And so what Cecilia is saying is it totally depends on where you are to think of what your neighbors, quote, over the line are doing.
Well, except that in this case, it was historically part of the Austrian Empire.
Yes.
Hence my Schwarz family name, which comes from the Austrian Empire and what is now part of Italy.
It's funny when you mentioned family names.
Pardon
me? My family name was Myloff. It was changed to Miles because my father went in the show business. So everybody.
How do you spell it, Myloff?
M-I-L-A-E-F.
A-E-F?
Myloff. I'm not really sure. But it was, his name was Jacob Myloff. My name, would have been Moish Myloff.
Yeah.
Moishe. Moishe.
Well, I've been called a lot of things.
No, but now it's going to be Moishe. I've been calling him Miles because many people.
I like to say, Moishe. As my grandmother never would have said, Moishe.
Moishe.
My grandmother was very, actually one grandmother spoke like an old Brooklynite.
Right.
You go in a green current. I'll boil you an egg. and the other grandmother was very, very proper and into a correct elocution, as she might say. And also standing up straight. I was put against the wall way too many times.
Didn't you have to walk with a book on your head? All right, listen, guess what Marshall's telling me? Moishe
says. Time.
It's time.
So, I don't know, cherry soup may be in order today. I've just been eating them out of hand. They're so good. But now that I've eaten a lot of them out of hand, maybe it's time to make Russian cherry soup.
There you go.
Sounds like
I go to a Russian restaurant today, they're going to have it.
That would be easier. Then you wouldn't have to cook.
Well, I've decided that 1 hour a day I can put a flame on the stove.
All right. An hour a day keeps the joy intact.
Yes.
All right.
Okay,
love you, Bob.
Dears,
have a
great week. Keep cool. I understand from Marshall it'll be better tomorrow.
Yes. It will.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks, bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com. You can also find him when we put it up on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on on-demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.